Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Photographer Dan Farnham grew up in the Michigan auto town of Saginaw. And over the past decade, the now Tulsa-based photographer has returned to Saginaw, various locales around Detroit and Flint, to photograph young people in their towns in a project he calls Youngblood. Using a 4x5 camera, he captures intimate portraits of the young people he encounters and a sense of optimism against a backdrop oftentimes of deterioration and neglect. His work is currently on display at the Zero Center for Art and Education in the Tulsa Arts District and is the subject of a new book. Youngblood has its book launch this Friday. Farnham is currently a Tulsa Artist Fellow and an Associate Professor of Art and Photography at the University of Tulsa. His prints have been exhibited at the Burrard Arts Foundation in Vancouver, the Royal Albert Hall in London, Photo Book Melbourne, and the Aperture Gallery in New York City. His work has been featured in Time magazine and the Beijing-based magazine Vision. The book launch for Youngblood takes place this Friday evening at Magic City Books at 6:30. That event is free to the public. And again, his work is on display at the Zero Center through November 29th. Dan Farnham is my guest today. Dan Farnham, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Youngblood, this is a project you've been working on for about a decade, documenting the youth and landscapes in Michigan's auto towns. That's where you grew up. What led you to doing this project?
As you mentioned, it's where I grew up. I grew up in a town called Saginaw. It's kind of near Flint. And I grew up in a nice part of town, or like kind of a middle-class part of town, but it's had the same kind of problems as you'd imagine Flint would have in Detroit. So it's an environment I grew up in, so I care about it a lot. And I didn't start making the work until I moved away, actually. I'd gone to graduate school in California, and I had moved back to the Midwest, but to Missouri, where I used to be a professor at the University of Missouri. And during that time, things in Saginaw started to get more violent, and there were more issues that were coming up kind of in relation to that, like teens and youth and gang violence. And that wasn't really my experience growing up there. Like, those things existed, but I kind of enjoyed growing up in my hometown. So I wanted to paint a different narrative, essentially, of what it was like there.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but these Michigan auto towns, they're kind of like Oklahoma's energy business. You know, it's a boom and bust cycle, and each time the boom happens, it's a little less and quite a bit less than the one before. And as employment just steadily goes down, as more auto jobs go elsewhere, you know, to other states or other countries.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's one of the issues with the economy in Michigan for years, is it's essentially a single industry.
Just economy, like Oklahoma with energy. Yeah.
Michigan had been on the decline since probably like the mid 60s, particularly Detroit at that time. And there were some other issues, like some violence that happened in the city there, which pushed people out into the suburbs, among some other issues that happened. And then that kind of spread out into some of the other cities in that region. And I do find it similar to Tulsa. Coming to Tulsa has actually been very easy for me to photograph in a lot of ways because it feels very familiar. So as you mentioned, there is a boom and bust history here, which is changing now. But some of the neighborhoods seem quite familiar. I did another project called Rumbleville here, which was kind of like a sister project to Youngblood, because I kept finding these kids and these teenagers out in public spaces where they were like filling their time, hanging out, goofing around, kind of dreaming of what they could do. So yeah, I find it very parallel.
Class divide's a big part of your work.
It's a huge part of my work. And it's something that I recognized pretty quickly when I got here. Of course, the north side has a pretty harsh split from the rest of town, but also the west side and the east side too. Things seem kind of sectioned off, even more so than some of the places around where I grew up. Like, the lines are more distinct here, which was surprising to me.
So what was it you wanted to capture about these auto towns?
I wanted to capture something that was more hopeful, which I think is genuine. Like, I think it's there, and I think there's potential for that. And particularly like these like teens and young adults, there's a lot of energy there. There's a lot of passion there. And with the right mentorship and sort of the right direction, you know, it can be a really strong driving force to help create change. In a lot of cases, it already is. And I think it's a matter of kind of like recognizing that and then having that branch out into like more programming for these kids.
How has the cities that you've been documenting changed over the 10 years? You started in 2009. That had to be had to be a low ebb point because of what we were seeing. You know, literally the auto industry was collapsing in 2009.
Absolutely. Yeah, I actually had briefly moved back to Michigan around that time too when I finished graduate school. I guess it was a few years before that. And the economy was just so bad. It was so terrible. I was teaching adjunct, which I was lucky I did that because it helped get me on my career path. But I had a lot of trouble finding a full-time job and ultimately had to move away because of that. And I think that's a common issue in a lot of Michigan. There are some places like Grand Rapids that maybe has a little bit more of an economic bubble, but particularly Southeast Michigan got hit pretty hard. And it's something that, there's aspects that are changing in some of the places, but it's not universal. Like, I think one example is, like, if you look at Detroit, there's an area that used to be called the Cass Corridor, which was like a very desolate, really dangerous part of Detroit right next to downtown that now, like, is unrecognizable to me. It's been gentrified super quickly, which has pros and cons, of course. I went down and had lunch with my brother a couple summers ago. He works down there. We were sitting outside, like, at a cafe, and I was like, man, this feels like Chicago. It's, like, weird to me. It's, like, good, but it's, like, so weird. But that's, like, one part of Detroit. And if you go out of that radius, that small radius of where the change is happening, it falls off.
You can see that other Detroit, yeah.
Yeah, it falls off harshly, like, right. Pretty quick. And then there'll be another bubble that's in a, you know, a better spot. But then, of course, there'll be, like, several other neighborhoods and communities around there that are not.
What's interesting about your work, even though you are focusing on these auto towns, that's not the primary focus. It's the youths of these areas that are your focus. Most of the photographs are portraits of young people, often very intimate close-ups of these their faces, others full portrait with maybe the neighborhood as a backdrop. But why take that approach where you're really focusing in on faces?
I really wanted to humanize the situation. And I think part of like understanding like the potential in the location is understanding the people. And as I mentioned earlier, I see this potential in the youth and I see this energy in the youth. So I thought it was important to bring viewers in close proximity to those people so there can be like a connection or bond artistically or metaphorically so that hopefully that translates into something real when it happens in person.
The portraits seem very thoughtful. Obviously, you spend a lot of time with your subjects. This was not a, you know, snap a picture, seeing a young person in a park that is sort of dilapidated. You spend a lot of time with these kids. Take us through the process of gaining their trust to take a portrait that is somewhat telling about them personally.
Yeah, sure. So one of the things that's been an important aspect to my process is using a large format film camera and probably like, for that, this project and this
talking about a 4x5 or?
Yeah, so it's a 4x5 sheet film. And for those of you that don't know, it kind of looks like an accordion and you put the hood over your head. So like straight out of the 1800s.
Right. So that gets their interest right there.
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of times they talk to me first because they see the camera and they're like, whoa, what is that? Just because they're not familiar with them. And that's usually like a pretty easy segue to have a conversation with pretty much anyone I photograph. One of the other things that helps quite a bit is, at least when I started, a lot of the places are where I used to grow up skateboarding. So like I have like an actual past or an actual history in a lot of the locations. So that was very easy to like roll up to, say, a particular parking lot or like a schoolyard or something like that and be able to talk about my time there. So these kids could see me as someone who is familiar or they're comfortable with because they have like a shared experience or a shared history just at different times. So it was easy to talk to them in that way too.
Yeah, but again, the portraits are in many respects very quiet. Mm-hmm. They're so obviously you spent some time before you got that picture that you wanted.
Oh yeah, for sure. Even like a quick moment of trying to take a picture of someone with that camera is inevitably like a 10 to 15 minute excursion of just setting it up, focusing, framing, talking with the subject to help them calm down. You know, that's like a quick moment. So like some of the time I've spent like 2 or 3 hours with subjects just hanging out and maybe casually photographing a little bit here and there. But a lot of the time it's just actually waiting until the right moment. And waiting until I feel like there's a connection where they understand who I am and what my goals are. And that ultimately I'm there to like kind of help their community.
So maybe that look is boredom.
I kind of is in some ways. I kind of joke that like I lull people into boredom through the process. So then they have a more natural expression on their face rather than reacting to the camera and just smiling by instinct.
No, I think that's what's telling about these photographs is you're capturing an inner sense of the individuals because the camera seems to be invisible.
Yeah, they at a certain point forget about it, which in one ways is like the initial hurdle. There's like, you know, what's in the background and composition of that stuff. But one of the first goals is make them forget about the camera, make them think about me and our conversation. And then that sort of awkwardness that happens when people stand in front of a lens dissipates over, you know, that 10, 15 or 2 or 3 hour moment.
Of course, with a 4x5, you know, image to image, it's not like a digital camera or even an old fashioned 35mm. I mean, you're talking minutes and minutes between exposures.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because if someone shifts or if they like take a step back, my focusing point's off. So then it's redoing that whole process of setting up again, which might be a little bit quicker, but it's still going to take at least another few minutes to get them back in the place I would like them to be in and then set up again and get a new piece of film in.
Yeah. In Youngblood, your book and your project, some of them are very close photographs. It could be a young person anywhere. Others use your backdrop of these Michigan auto towns. Others are portraits of the landscape. What was your guiding force in deciding how you wanted to tell the story?
In a lot of ways, I think the place, like visibly, is important to understanding the people. And before I started this project, I used to be a landscape photographer primarily. So I kind of come with that sensibility to a lot of the pictures I take.
But this project doesn't strike me as landscape as very much at all.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Right. So like sort of like what translated from the landscape sort of approach in the past is thinking about where do I place someone in an environment and what kind of background might they have behind them? And then like what does that convey to the viewer? So some of my photographs feel like I'm setting up landscape pictures where I'm setting people in them to like personalize it more.
Are they constructed photographs as far as I have this backdrop I want to show, I need you here? Or is it a matter of finding people where they are?
It's a little bit of both. Every once in a while, I'll just find like this beautiful building that has some like great light on it or something like that. And I'll just wait. And I'll just wait for the right person to come through. So that sometimes happens. Other times it's a little bit more collaborative. So I'll be hanging out with, you know, a group of kids and I'll kind of let things unfold. And then sometimes they sort of steer me to, you know, what their backdrop should be through conversation or just whatever their activity is that they might be doing at that moment. And in that way, again, I think about that more as a collaborative moment rather than me just kind of filling someone in to a landscape.
Now, you mentioned you were involved in skateboarding culture when you were growing up. And that was obviously an entree. Is this depicting more skateboard culture or just everyday culture within these auto towns?
I think it's more everyday culture within like this age group.
It's about what, 15 to 20 or about?
Maybe a little bit broader, but that's close. Uh-huh. So maybe sometimes like 13 or 14 through, some of the people might be closer to 25. A lot of them are like kind of late teens, early 20s.
In that adolescent period of wherever it goes. I was struck by a number of the images. One, there's an image of a young man next to a makeshift basketball goal that looked like it was created by the neighborhood. And yet in the background, there's like an open fire hydrant and water's just flooding everywhere. How did that shot come about?
It's funny, that shot actually, the first picture I took had no people in it. Yeah. And it's sort of like one of those moments where like there's this beautiful or amazing scene that's happening. And I would just photograph that anyways, but there's always, you know, people just kind of walking through the neighborhoods. So I kind of waited after I took that initial picture. And the first person to come into the frame is the person who's centralized in the middle. But while I was talking to him and setting up that shot, there's two people in the background that kind of drifted into the side of the frame. I could see it happening, but I didn't want to say anything because I didn't want to interrupt the moment. And they kind of like perfectly slipped in there. Mm-hmm. So it's sometimes those moments are like better than I could have thought of. Because I potentially could have walked away with just a picture of some buildings, yeah, which maybe would have been okay, but not nearly as good as, you know, having those three kids in there.
Now, there are landscape photographs in the collection. some of tract houses that obviously were built in a neighborhood's heyday when things were booming in that town. Others show, well, just sort of that upper Midwest. You hear about it in Detroit and various places where there'll be an empty lot next to a beautiful old home that's in utterly decrepit, falling down condition, right next to a home that's being kept up, another beautiful home. These are the neighborhoods that you would see in an auto town.
Oh, absolutely. Kind of like the urban or suburban landscape is really scattered between, like, you know, kind of like these desolate places, but then places that are inhabited. And part of it is like maybe someone was able to kind of shelter economically a little bit and sustain their home. There's also a lot of pride too up there. You know, whether like people have been in their home and maintained it, or just in general, people kind of like carry that on their shoulder of like, I grew up here, this place is important, I care about it, regardless of how it might look to you. I find that it's a common thing, which I find really inspiring.
There was a number of photographs that I want to know the story behind them. I was mm-hmm. talking about the young man with the makeshift basketball goal and the fire hydrant shooting off in the background. There was another one where the girl who's posing, almost like a glamour pose, but I have a feeling it was just a matter of where you caught her when, you know, she's putting her hand through her hair. And yet in the backdrop, way back in the backdrop, there's what looks like to be a tire fire. I mean, it's such thick black smoke in the backdrop. Otherwise, everyone's oblivious to this, what's going on in the backdrop, in the far background.
Yeah, absolutely. So that is actually a fire in the background. And it wasn't from a tire factory. It was from a confections or candy factory, which you wouldn't necessarily know seeing the picture. But
yeah, it was that black smoke like a tire
yeah,
fire.
You see the smoke, right? And that's probably the important part there. So in Detroit in particular, actually that's technically Highland Park, which is like a little city within Detroit. The funding for the fire department is really bad because there's not a really strong tax base to fund those things. So when you have like these large fires, so they just kind of go all day and the fire department's there to try and just kind of like keep it from spreading essentially rather than saving the thing itself that's necessarily on fire. So in that kind of moment, like you have like people essentially kind of like watching like from the community, like out hanging out, like watching. It's kind of like, you know, like the train wreck you can't look away from. Like people are out there, they're intrigued. Again, just kind of there watching the spectacle. So in that moment, you know, it's like talking to this woman, just trying to get a sense for who she is. And I was like, oh, yeah, I was going to take a picture of this. You want to be in my photograph? And this is like one of the quicker moments, actually. There wasn't quite as much dialogue with this moment, but she kind of like naturally went into that pose. So like sometimes that happens. I think people sort of like think they want to look a certain way in a picture, and which, you know, if someone wants to, I'm open to that. And that's sort of the pose that she went into.
My guest today is Dan Farnham, a photographer, associate professor of art and photography at the University of Tulsa. He's also a Tulsa Artist Fellow. He has a new book project titled Young Blood. It's 10 years of photographs of youth and landscapes in Michigan's auto towns. The release party takes place at Magic City Books this Friday at 6:30. And you can also see the work on display at the Zero Center for Art and Education in the Tulsa Arts District through November 29th. I've seen this in several of your series. You have an affinity for abandoned playgrounds and ball fields. What's behind that?
That definitely crosses over multiple projects of mine. I think part of it is I'm interested in childhood and I'm interested in adolescence. And in Young Blood, it's mostly through portraiture and portraits of people in those locations. But I do have like past projects like my thesis work was called Growing Up. And that was about the memory of childhood, but it was more suburban. But it was more about like the memory and not like the active moment of the kid. So I was photographing a lot of those locations. So I have kind of this natural draw, I think. Part of it's nostalgia. Part of it's, you know, just sort of like my own personal memories. I think also like those locations are important for a lot of people because they're places where people go out and explore and look around without their parents. Like, so if you go to a game, your parents might be there, like if you're going to play in a, like a Little League game or something. But those are also the places where teens go to like get away when no one else is there. So they become like very formative for people. They were formative for me. And because a lot of the time I was either skateboarding around them or just like kind of goofing around them. But a lot of like important moments in my like teen years in particular happened in those locations. So I think I just keep coming back to them.
Right. A lot of times those fields, like certainly practice fields and things like that, they're just pasture land that somebody put a backstop up and a baseball diamond. And when that generation grows up, it goes back to being a pasture.
Yeah, they tend to be very humble locations. And then again, it's like interesting how like those kind of locations, even feeling kind of makeshift sometimes, become important to like individuals who hung out there.
I was really struck by, you know, when you hear a project, say you're documenting the youth and landscapes in Michigan's auto towns, you expect to see one sort of image. And I did not see this in your imagery. And that has to do with the fact that there's a great sense of hopefulness that seems to be in these kids' faces. There are images of, I think there's an image of an abandoned house where it's sort of become a makeshift memorial with a lot of booze bottles making sort of a cross leading up to the front of the house. I mean, there's that. But most of these images, there's a real sense of hopefulness in this imagery.
Yeah, and I think there is a lot of potential with these kids, and I think that's part of it. And in some ways, I think another part too, and this kind of happened to me, is like I didn't necessarily understand the town I grew up in until I moved away. And these kids haven't moved away yet, you know, if they're able to. So sometimes it takes being out of it to come back to it, to sort of like see it. So sometimes I kind of wonder, like, do they see sort of the hardship that is around them? I think some do, but not all. That's maybe an aspect of it. But I think there is sort of this genuine sense that there is the potential to make something better. And there are sort of like templates for that in some of the towns I photograph in, like through urban farming or like thinking of sort of creative ways of using like old structures or parts of the landscape that are happening with people who are maybe not that much older than them, that are kind of pushing those initiatives. And then in the best moments, those people are also bringing in the kids into those situations so they can see that.
As you mentioned earlier, you've also contrast what you saw in the towns you grew up in Michigan, with experiences you're seeing in Tulsa in your Rumbleville series. Again, a series that is exploring class divides. And again, this generation that most of the time are out on the street for their entertainment, for whatever. Do you see similarities or differences?
I see both. I think in the bigger picture, I see a lot of similarities. Sort of like, you know, what is the opportunity going to look like? What kind of like educational experiences are they having? How involved are the parents in their lives? And then you see this sort of like sense of like kind of roaming and going through these locations that like a lot of like middle class or upper middle class parents might not want their kids hanging out in these neighborhoods, but it's normal to them because it's their community. So I do notice some differences that are also here that are not in some of the other places. And I think it goes back to the specificity of the history of the place. Like every place has their own complicated history, but Tulsa has its own as well. And I think that's something that like is becoming more in the forefront now, that I think a lot of people are recognizing, like things related to the race massacre that happened in the 20s. And how does that affect people who live and grow up through generations and places?
The racial and class divides and the segregation of class and race were perhaps more pronounced in this community than others?
It seems like it is here. Like up north, like there certainly are issues with like race divides, like sure. Unfortunately. But it seems like it's a little bit more of an economic thing. Where here, it seems like there's more sort of like baggage or hangups associated with race, which maybe I'm a northerner coming to like a southern part of the country and just not being used to it. But it's kind of alarming for me to see. But I think there is, you know, potential, like the Public Oversight Committee working with the mass graves here, I think is an important thing that has a lot of potential for change. Kaiser, who funds Tulsa Artist Fellowship, which is great, also does a lot of stuff for youth and you know, different parts of the community to help try and make their lives better. So there are things that are happening. But on sort of initial view, like there is a pretty big divide between race and class here.
My guest today is Dan Farnham, photographer and associate professor of art and photography at the University of Tulsa and a Tulsa Artist Fellow. He has a new book titled Young Blood. The release party takes place at Magic City Books this Friday at 6:30, and you can see the work on display at the Zero Center for Art and Education. I was struck by something you said. You know, a number of your series seem to be about recapturing a sense of your youth and your growing up. You do have a series that is absolutely about that from your mass media consumption, and it's called the syndicated, where you've been photographing sites that have been used in television and movies. I guess you did this one out in L.A. and out in Southern California. These coming-of-age stories that you probably watched as a youth. Mm-hmm. What was that like, trying to find old houses that were family homes on television shows or in movies?
Yeah, a lot of that project had a lot of research, a lot of looking at like Google Earth and trying to find these locations, and then looking up essentially superfan websites
right.
that list like sort of like where these addresses are. And in some ways, that is sort of like a project that connects a lot of dots for me. It's one I haven't exhibited as much yet anyways. But I think it is interesting that like we have these sort of like genuine experiences, but then we also have experiences that are kind of like shown to us that a lot of people like replace their own experiences with the experiences they're seeing on TV and movies. Now, starting the project, I think I had sort of a natural thrill that a lot of people would have. Like The Wonder Years in particular was a really favorite show of mine growing up. And that was the Kevin Arnold house. Was literally the first house I went to for this project. And it's like crazy standing there because it's like you recognize the hills in the background from like the opening montage. The house is so familiar. It feels like you could like walk up to it. But then, of course, there's a regular, in this case, there's a regular person just living there who wouldn't want me on their property. And I think sort of that intersection of like people who like have actual experiences and lives in those neighborhoods and in those literal houses, but then feeling like it's part of my childhood somehow, like one is like a little bit disorienting and sort of like kind of confusing then in terms of like, well, what was my childhood like? Or am I like rose colored glasses thinking about Kevin Arnold?
Well, and of course, the thing with film and television is you're seeing a very carefully curated view. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes that house, you are led to believe it is in a beautiful neighborhood, and yet it's a constructed view of what you see, a constructed reality.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And the more I've worked on that project and then like tried to watch movies and TV shows afterwards, so much of it's filmed in Southern California in the Los Angeles suburbs. But like, say, Freaks and Geeks, as an example, is supposed to take place in Detroit, actually, in those suburbs. And it's all filmed north of, most of it's filmed north of Los Angeles and a little town called Santa Clarita.
Mm-hmm. Well, the new project is really interesting. Beautiful photography, hopeful faces, some bleak landscapes, but also some hope for those communities in Michigan. The name of the project is Youngblood. Dan, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Photographer Dan Farnham speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. He's an associate professor of art and photography at the University of Tulsa and a Tulsa Artist Fellow. His new book project is titled Young Blood. The release party will take place at Magic City Books this Friday evening at 6:30. And his work from the Young Blood series is on display at the Zero Center for Art and Education now through November 29th in the Tulsa Arts District. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.